Farm to still is a term used to mean the distiller controls all stages of production. In business terms, complete vertical integration. Jamie Walker is a keynote speaker at the Illinois Farm Bureau Conference in Uptown Normal today. In this conversation with GLT's Charlie Schlenker, he says farm to still is not the term he uses for his DeKalb area distillery, Whiskey Acres.
What we say here is seed to spirit. We control the entire process from the time the seed is planted in the ground until it's grown, harvested, mashed, fermented, distilled, aged, and bottled, all right here on the fifth generation family farm.
There are two obvious questions to ask, one about the quality control of the process because of that framework, and the other one about costs. How would you address both of how those factors are affected by your approach?
Well, first, from a quality control standpoint, we're very proud of the high-level premium product that we make here, not only in itself, but the manufacturer of the spirit. Our hands touch the process the entire way through, and most distilleries cannot say that. We are one of the very few distilleries in the United States that can make the claim that we control that entire process from the growing of the grain all the way through the spirit manufacture. In fact, we're only the second certified farm distillery in the U.S. So that's a big part of our quality control. And what was the second part of your question?
Cost.
From a cost perspective, you know, it makes some things more affordable. Obviously, our input costs for the feed stock for the distillery, the grain itself, because we're an entirely vertically integrated organization, that has lessened or lowered our feedstock costs. But then again, because of the intensive nature of the handmade process that we're doing here, crafting things in batches of relatively small quantities compared to, say, a Maker's Mark or a Jim Beam, that just from an economies of scale standpoint increases the cost. So there's a bit of a trade-off.
Why should Northern Illinois, Sycamore, DeKalb, Rockford area be a distillery hotspot as opposed to the Bourbon Trail in Kentucky?
You know, it's interesting. People, when they think of bourbon, oftentimes think of Kentucky. It is true that bourbon is a product that is unique to the United States. So bourbon can only be manufactured under international trade rules in the United States. But what surprises most people is to learn that it actually was not Kentucky, but Illinois. Illinois was the number one producer of bourbon in the United States before Prohibition. After Prohibition, many of the distilleries did not survive the Prohibition era in Illinois. Many of them were based in the Peoria area and did not reopen. So we ceded that number one position to Kentucky at that time. But truly, we produce some of the best corn in the world here in Illinois. And as we say on every bottle that we make, great whiskey isn't made, it's grown. And we grow some of the best corn in the world.
Before the income tax and before Prohibition, alcohol provided much of the revenue of the federal government, and the Peoria area was a big part of that income generation for the government. Do you think that is ever going to be a factor again, that sort of revenue from the alcohol industry for local governments or for state or for federals?
I would answer the question in the affirmative because it's ongoing. As you stated, at one time the main source of revenue for the federal government was alcohol excise tax. It was the instigator of what was called the Whiskey Rebellion. Subsequently, over the years, we've obviously introduced a number of taxes on business and individuals. But the excise tax for alcohol production remains quite strong. In fact, it is our single biggest cost in every bottle that we currently make. So even today, The excise tax at both the federal and the state level amounts to a very high amount of revenue for the government. It is why we're so heavily regulated by the government agencies to make sure we're on the up and up, not skimming anything off. And your listeners may be surprised to know that our tax bill runs about $30,000 per month in generated excise tax revenue to the state and federal levels.
Goodness.
Yeah. It's a lot.
So, are we to discern anything about your overall revenue based on that one tax bill?
I don't know if that's fair to say, but we do produce a fair bit of hooch. We manufacture here between 70 and 75,000 bottles a year, and the tax revenue in every bottle is between $4 and $5. It depends a little bit on the amount of alcohol or the proof in every bottle.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Jamie Walter of the Whiskey Acres Distillery in Northern Illinois. He's a keynote speaker at the Illinois Farm Bureau Assembly in Normal this week. We had the craft beer movement years ago that has, by some accounts, peaked, although it's still growing substantially. And brown spirits came along and started growing as well. What's the trend line, and where do you expect your sector to peak?
Yeah, so we did a lot of work on this before we decided to enter the market. This was not just a pipe dream that we had one day and decided to wake up and make booze. We were very calculated in our analysis. And when we did that analysis back in about 2011 and 12, and what we saw was a trend in the industry toward more craft production. Certainly we could look at craft beer as a bit of a benchmark for us to see the rapid growth in that industry. And what we found, and the research has found, is that many people that gravitated toward craft beer subsequently also gravitate toward craft spirits of various sorts. When we started looking at the craft spirits industry and seeing its rapid rise, and mind you, in about 2000, the year 2000, there were roughly 20 or so craft distilleries in the entire United States. By the time that we opened our doors in 2014, there were approximately 600 or 700 of us, and that has again doubled since that time. So today there's 1,300 craft distilleries, and while that seems like a lot, you could put all of us together and our volume wouldn't equate to the amount of spirits that someone like a Jim Beam produces. So, you know, there's great room for growth in volume. Bourbon and brown spirits in general are the fastest growing segment of the spirits industry globally. And so customer demand is very high, both domestically and especially abroad as well.
Is it a boutique kind of purchase, or is it going to be a mainstay for consumers?
Yes and no. So I would say, as a general rule, craft spirits, are probably at first a little bit of a boutique in the sense that they are generally premium priced, and they are oftentimes harder to acquire, harder to find. For example, we are currently only distributed in the state of Illinois. So our customers that might purchase us from outside the state today have to look long and hard in order to find the product and find a seller here in the state of Illinois that is willing to, say, ship a product. Eventually, we will be more widespread. We will be in other states. But because of the price point, it certainly is a bit of a boutique. However, just like craft beer, eventually, as the consumer palate develops, they have a preference that they're willing to pay for that, and will buy it on a more regular basis. And that seems to be especially true within the younger millennial generation. They seem to put a premium on not just the product itself, but the backstory and the transparency of the production process, which are all things that we bring to the table.
Is that something that can be baked into a culture going forward? Are these millennials going to maintain that preference throughout their lives, or how fast do trends change?
Well, that's a good question, and I don't know the specific answer to that. I would say that, you know, if we use craft beer as a bit of a benchmark, you know, that industry has had tremendous momentum for upwards of 25 to 30 years now. So I don't think we can say it's a fad. I would say that that probably is going to hold true in the spirits industry in general. However, we do see things wax and wane in certain categories. For example, there was quite a bit of flash with white whiskey back not too long ago, and we're already seeing fair reductions in the demand for those kinds of products.
Part of the attraction of white whiskey, though, as a marketing point, is that it takes a while to bring a bourbon to market because it needs aging, and white whiskey is not doesn't have that limitation.
That's absolutely true, and that's probably part of the reason why it's losing a little luster, as there's a greater supply of it today on the market. Most of the big boys didn't have an interest in making a white whiskey, so white whiskeys were generally produced by small craft distillers that were trying to generate cash flow in the near term while they waited for the rest of their spirits to come of age. So, you know, as we get so many more craft distillers, new craft distillers on the market, you see a lot more of those white spirits. Now, you also see a lot of vodka. Those are things that most of us, including ourselves, have dabbled in, and even in the case of vodka, continue to produce some of. But by and large, I think the real growth, the real staying power in the industry is the brown spirits. And from a selfish standpoint, I will also say that it does create those barriers of entry, create a little bit of a moat around the well-capitalized and well-run distilleries like our own.
Where is the market going to come from as this sector matures? Is it going to be a local market? Is it going to be a tourism market? Is it going to be a regional distribution? Or is there a network of stores that cater to craft distilling movement?
There's basically within the craft model, I see really three different functioning business plans. And the first is the purely local. There are, you know, more of those hobby distillers, the very small distillers that produce solely for their own gift shop. You know, they may have a tasting room or a gift shop on their property, and they produce for a very local market with maybe few, if any, other additional retail facilities besides their own distillery. That is certainly one model. Another model is to try to get big quick. You see some distilleries, I'll give you an example, like a Tito's, that, started as craft at one time, but then quickly as they grew have tried to capitalize on a much larger distribution footprint, and that is their bread and butter today. And then you've got people kind of somewhere in the middle like us that find that a significant portion of our revenue and a significant portion of our market exposure comes from our interactions in the tasting room and in the physical location of our property. So having guests come here and experience our brand firsthand and have a cocktail on our cocktail patio, take a tour, buy a t-shirt and perhaps a couple bottles to go home is a significant driver of revenue. And we get people that come from not only the Chicago and Chicago suburban market, but a surprising number of visitors that come from an excess of 100 to 150 miles away. So that's a big piece of our pie. However, distribution is as well. We're distributed in over 550 locations now in Illinois. And in the coming months and years, as we have more product that is mature, we expect that we will begin entering other states around the U.S.
Jamie Walter is the CEO of Whiskey Acres Distillery in the DeKalb area. He spoke with GLT's Charlie Schlenker. Walter is a keynote speaker this afternoon at an Illinois Farm Bureau conference in Uptown Normal.